Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Initech.
No, you're working at Initech because that question is bull to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Well, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke. Don't do
if I had $1 million.
Well, pay Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Ricky on the board. SP Futures down 16. NASDAQ Futures down 172. We have Mr. Flanagan.
You do indeed. Morning, Tom.
How are you, bud? Thank you for showing, getting up this early. Poor Carl is indisposed. He's in route from somewhere to somewhere. That's what he does best, so he'll make up for it on Friday, I'm sure.
Hard shoes to fill, but they are actually hard shoes to fill,
but it's not like you don't have enough stuff to talk about. But Robert Duvall, huh? Another one bites the dust.
Jesse Jackson.
Yeah, Jesse Jackson. A couple of guys that were big time in a generation, huh? Well, Robert Duvall is 95, so he might have been the generation before, but still. Pretty serious guy. I remember seeing him when I was very young in a movie, and my first thought was, who's this guy? Almost like Jack Nicholson's small role in Easy Rider. If you remember that or not.
Before he was, recognized.
And everybody looked at his little role in Easy Rider and said, who the hell's that guy?
Right.
Do you remember, I'm not going to... all the million movies and TV things he did, because Robert Duvall was all over your TV stuff, like what was the one with about the 10-4? Old Broderick Crawford, he was in that. He was in The Twilight. He was in all that stuff.
All Highway Patrol.
Yeah, all those guys were in. What's his name was, too? Captain Kirk was in all those things. And I remember him in the movie Bullet. He was the cab driver.
Right. Brief. He's out on screen for like a minute. Is that?
It was more than that because they went from place to place. They did the same thing that the.
Oh, that's right. He does. He takes Steve McQueen. Yeah, that's right.
Takes Steve McQueen and he doesn't know exactly what he does. And so he stopped here for a phone call and he said he went out and made the phone call, came back, and what's next? And he wanted to do everything the guy did.
He knew it was a toll call because of the time it took to put the coins on the phone.
Yeah. And I'm sitting there thinking, who the hell is this guy? I mean, he's good. It was pretty obvious right as soon as you saw the guy. He was pretty good.
I had seen him in a couple films before. I realized that I'd also seen him in To Kill a Mockingbird and didn't know.
Oh, he was in that as well? Wow.
He plays Boo Radley, the guy, the mysterious guy with the mementos, and Scout is, a friend of his. He never speaks in the movie. And at the end, you realize he's the one who defended Jim.
It wouldn't be good for Stacks and Jacks contributors. They all want to talk.
Right.
So did you order your tree from the halftime show?
No.
It'd be perfect for you, talk about, shades of deja vu. As soon as I saw that, I found out they were people. It reminds me of my mother. She said she was in a high school play and she played the tree and she didn't like that so much.
Well, I remember my first grade play was, I think it was Red Riding Hood or Snow White or something. And I remember I was a woodsman or something.
You were what?
Big sign around my neck, woodsman.
Oh, God. you couldn't just wear a flannel shirt?
Well, my acting was not persuasive enough. They had to be told who I was.
God. What could be worse than my toss out of the choir? They didn't want me anywhere near the choir. I guess I couldn't hit any note less. They didn't even want me in there to mouth something in case I might have opened my mouth.
No lip syncing.
No,
needed,
like,
right?
That's when I asked my nephew's daughter, who's into the. She's got two daughters, and one is both terrific little girls. The one is into ballet. She's into playing the violin. The other one, if there's a soccer ball or something to jump on, she's on it, right? So talk about two different. But so when she plays the violin, I go, "Did they let you touch the cord?" She goes, "What do you mean?" I said, "Well, you're good enough to where they don't mind you playing with the group." "Well, of course." She has no idea what I'm talking about. So I'm trying to confuse the poor kid, But anyway, Jesse Jackson, long history there, obviously. Does that mean his other kid's going to win, even though he was thrown in jail last time he was in Congress?
Well, he said he was going to run again.
Yeah, he's running. He's definitely running. Yeah. Well, the one kid is in. He not to disparage on a Tuesday morning, day after President's Day, but he ran against our favorite, Karen Reeves.
Right.
And got a bunch of money from the Bitcoin guy that went to jail, right? The last week or two, and put him over the top.
Yep. Bankman-Fried.
Yeah, and I don't think he gave it back. Durbin gave it back, right?
No.
Well, I think he did.
You don't hear about that anymore, do you, Tom?
No, well, that's because it's chump change compared to what guys are getting now. Wasn't that long ago. What, $1 million for a representative primary is a lot of money. Was it $1.3 million, something like that?
Yeah.
And yeah, but what did Durbin give it back, right? Or give it to charity?
Yeah, I don't. Well, think
a lot of guys gave it back.
Exactly. Yeah, but he did return it.
I don't think they returned it. They gave it to charity. Why would you send it back to Bankman-Fried?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Please.
Yeah. I mean,
then you really know something was fishy, right?
Yeah, if you give it back to the guy, good Lord. So it's not like there's not enough news today. We got gold down like $100. We've got the market down. S&P futures down 12, NASDAQ futures down 145. They're actually up a hair last night, or at least unchanged. Now we're kind of heading south. Google's down 330. Tesla's down 369. NVIDIA's down $1.13. Microsoft's down $1.71. Some stocks, they're just sort of getting hammered. I don't know. I was talking to some people this weekend, and sort of an odd situation. I have some stock where I know people have it, and some stock that I know they have it because they have accounts here, and they're concentrated issues, right? And we have a bunch of people. I don't know if they are just amazingly intelligent or got a horseshoe up there behind or what, but people that have owned stock for literally years and years. And in the last 6 months have said, I want you to protect this for me. They bring the stock over here, and I do a put and call kind of combo, obviously in a full conversation with the client as to how much, in protection we're looking for and those kinds of things. How much of the upside do we want to potentially seal off, if at all? So it's a long conversation. It's not a conversation you're going to have with, Fisher Investments type of place. We're just going to put your money in Big Cap Bob and Mid Cap Mike. But some of these stocks are just getting their ass kicked. Like down 25, 30, 35% in like 6 months to a year. It's like these, I have one group where I have some of the stock and other people I know they have it that I don't have it. And you have the kind of, you never want to go too crazy when you're talking to people, but I'm like, gee, are you a little worried about that stock? What do you mean? What do I mean? It's down like 30% in 6 months. And a lot of people, it's still way above where they either got it as employees or it's way above what it was. And there's an amazing thing when our buddy Jimmy's on. Of course, Jimmy likes to argue about everything, but there's an amazing difference of opinion in the investment community. And I don't know where you are, but if you bought a stock at 20 and say it's trading 200, and we're talking about maybe is it time for protection, especially if it's now it started out being 10% of your portfolio and now it's 90, well, that's a difference, right? I mean, that's why you can't give it, well, a lot of reasons why you can't give advice on the air, because everybody's different. I mean, when he says, how about IBM? Well, I like IBM. Okay, it's a nice company, blah, blah, blah. They seem to be doing decent. I don't like what they're doing with China, but that's another story. It's a political problem. But The so you know, how much what's your portfolio? All right, you know, $500,000. How much IBM you got? Yeah, 30,000-40,000. Fine, you like IBM, cool. Well, all of a sudden you're retired, your portfolio is $1,000,000 and 990 of it is IBM. Well, now it's a different conversation, right? You have massive single stock risk. There's kind of three kinds of risk, John. Traditionally there were three kinds of risk. There is market risk, you know, interest rates do this, a war does this, something like that. The whole market goes up and down. Then there's specific industry risk, where if you're in the AI industry, okay, all you had to do is have something that said AI behind it, and it went up last year. Now this year, not so much, you know, if you're not in the right ones. Or a specific company risk, where you're in the auto industry, which your particular stock, the auto industry is doing fine, but your stock just went belly up. So there's three different kinds. But if you have a concentration issue, you basically have all three, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, but people are like, if you bought a stock at, like I say, $50, and now it's trading 400, and it goes to 350, you think, I'm still up a boatload, right? Maybe. Or I'm going to say, wait a minute, John, we started talking about it when it was 400. Now it's 350. I think we're down 50. It's the difference between a trader and a retail investor. And I'm not asking you necessarily to opine on the difference, but there is a difference. I mean, as a trader, you mark yourself to market every day. And if I know you own a stock, when you first start talking to me about a stock at 300 and it's 200, your first thing is, hey, I bought it 100, I'm still up 100. My thought is, when you started talking to me about it, it was 300, now it's 200, we're down 100. The mentality is, if you trade every day, you mark yourself to market every day. So nobody's ever going to convince me the other way is right, because they did this every day for 20 years, right? But it is different, don't you think?
Yeah. Well, explain to me, Tom, maybe some of the listeners too, what does it mean today, you know, in this kind of environment where, you know, you got risks in all the places you were just mentioning, but what does it mean to diversify your portfolio? Has that changed at all in the last 10, 20 years?
I hate to say this. Depends. I mean, before they had exchange traded funds, I mean, they had mutual funds, right? But before they had exchange traded funds, if you were to say, of course, the market was a lot lower, it was easier. If you were going to say, hey, Tom, I'm going to open up an account at PTI, here's $1,000,000. You know, you wrote a little something from one of your checking accounts. $1,000,000, let's be diversified. Well, you and I would sit, you know, for a while. And I would, you know, because, I mean, it's your account, right? And I never held myself out to be the world's greatest stock picker, because guess what? I'm not. And the difference between me and everybody else, I admit it. And the whole idea, you know, you can walk in. Try and walk into the trading floor and trade four stocks in your pit, and every morning walk in and say, that one's going down, that one's going up, these two are going to be unchanged. Good luck with that. Now, if you do it every day, you realize it's pretty damn hard to do. Anyway, so you and I might pick, well, John, why don't we do 20 stocks, and we'll kind of spread them around industries, and we'll put $50,000 in a stock. And you might say, well, that makes sense. Now, what have we just done? We've kind of got rid of some of the individual stock risk. You know, if we find out the next day that the chairman has been doing God knows what, and the stock goes to zero, we're down, but we didn't blow it a whole million. You know, in my business, I'm always worried about stuff going down. You know, the going up part, it'll take care of itself. But now we've gotten rid of some of that. That you know, we've gotten rid of any kind of concentration issue. But again, it comes down to, do we pick any clunkers? You know, because you don't want, out of the 20 stocks, we'd like to have, you know, half of them, or a few more than half, beat the market. And the other eight, maybe a couple break even, and maybe your clunkers aren't too bad. Well, once you have exchange-traded funds, now all of a sudden you can buy the S&P, which is the first one. You can buy the QQQs. Now you can buy the oil piece of the S&P. You can buy the banking piece of the S&P. So now you can buy the diversification in an industry if you want, or in the whole market. So that makes it somewhat easier. I don't know if that answers your question at all, in that regard. Yeah. So then you're not picking individual stocks. But diversification doesn't help you if all of a sudden the interest rates run, I'm not predicting this, if interest rates ran to 12 and the market goes from you know, 6,800 in the S&P to, you know, 3,200, you can be diversified all you want, right? It just means you lose money everywhere.
Well, I mean, it's sort of based on the assumption that risks don't usually converge, but they can converge.
Sure, they can.
Everything starts to move in the same direction, up or down. But diversifying, is that a way of dodging that, or is it?
Well,
is
you can, but now you also have to be careful there. I mean, I've actually a couple of clients that they have accounts where they had, you know, they're mostly, say, Apple, Google, NVIDIA, the ones that everybody's been in, right? And the reason why you get these concentration accounts, to get back to what your first question, I'm kind of spinning around here, but you got to be careful if you have an account where you have Microsoft, NVIDIA, and Apple, and you sell those three and buy the Qs, because the Qs are almost 50%, six or seven stocks, and those three are the biggest stocks, right? So you're almost not getting that much diversification in somebody's funds now, because they're so dominated by a few stocks. So if you were to say, gee, I'm going to sell my Microsoft and I'm going to buy the Qs, well, you just bought a bunch of Microsoft back, basically. You know, not all of it. I mean, it's going to be 4 or 5%, but you didn't exactly exit your Microsoft, right? Because it's a big hunk of the index you just bought.
Well, this seems like it's a challenge to diversification now that formerly wasn't maybe so pronounced. Would you say it's harder to diversify now because of things like that?
Yeah, you know what, Jen? It always sort of was. I'll give you talk about a story. This was the Gulf One, all right? One of my clients said to me, here's a bunch of money, like a bunch of money. And it was an interesting phenomenon, John, is that, boy, I'm going to go off on a limb here. Tell me when I lose you. The implied volatilities in some of the individual stocks were lower than in the indexes, which never usually happens. It's the other way around. Now they would call it the VIX, but there's not a VIX in individual stocks. So there was an index at the Amex, and I don't even know if the thing even still exists, called the XMI. It was a response to the CBOE's OEX, right? So they had this thing called the XMI, and there's 20 stocks in there. And so I mentioned this maybe with a speech somewhere, and somebody says to me, hey, here's like a lot of money, like $1 million. Back then it was a lot of money. Now it's, you know, it's not a billion, it's not much. I said, why don't you put essentially backspreads on? Okay, what's a backspread? Backspread is the one where you are playing for, you're looking for a stock to move. So in other words, you're looking to be delta neutral. Let's say IBM is, say, trading 260. It's actually 257.99. It's trading 260. The 260 calls are probably 50 delta. In other words, so if a stock moves a buck, they're going to move a half a buck. Tell me where I lose you. So if I buy two of those and sell 100 shares of stock, I'm delta neutral. Now, if it stays right there, I basically get my ass kicked because stock options just go down. But if it moves one way or the other, I get longer on the way up and shorter on the way down. And if it goes flying down, all of a sudden I'm just naked short stock. So movement helps me. So what I did was I did these ratio spreads in all the 20 stocks. And, Jen, I was real careful to do all 20, right? And I sold a bunch of premium in the XMI. And we made a lot of money for this guy. And so at the end, you know, everybody's just congratulating me, you know, saying, all right, this was just great. So I went back and looked at it. If I would have, out of the 20 stocks, I think I got my ass kicked on like 8 of them. Made a little bit on maybe 10. And I absolutely kicked ass on 2. One of them being American Express, because, you know, this is going to be a world war. American Express must have gone down like 40% or something. I made a fortune in American Express. And there was one other stock. It was an oil stock or something. If I would have not done those two, boy, it would have been a fiasco. You know, a total fiasco. Because that's where I made all the dough, was in two stocks. So you got to be careful when you talk about diversity. They all behave sort of differently. Like, look at, you might say, actually, I'm not going to accuse you. I might say that, what's the one here? Micron might be in the same business as, not Adobe, I don't know what I'm talking about. The one that's been way down the whole time. Oracle. Micron might be. They're both tech stocks, right? I mean, I actually might do that, and a retail person probably would do that. Well, in the last 6 months, Oracle has gone from 325 in December to 158 today. Meanwhile, Micron, another tech stock, has gone from, September 3rd, it was 185, and it's now 403. So, I sure as hell hope I didn't pick Oracle is one of my, quote, tech stocks, right? So, yeah, I mean, diversification is always been tricky, but now it's really hard because you not only, and I don't know enough, you know, I don't know if anybody does, I mean, even Carl or Kevin, out of these 10 stocks that you and I might say are, quote, you know, high tech or something, there's every day now, it seems, a couple of them are down a chunk and a couple of them are up a chunk. They are absolutely not moving in unison. It's not always the same pairs that are down versus pairs or three lots that are up. I mean, I don't know what is causing that, where one day you'll see Microsoft way down and make Amazon way up. And 2 days later, it's Microsoft way back up again, but oh, by the way, it's Micron and somebody else down. There's incredible volatility within, let's say, not only the major seven, but the top 10, which I'll be honest with you, I don't know if anybody understands because I sure don't.
But, well, that's kind of my impression, just looking from a distance and you're not getting, you know, into the nitty gritty of it. But it does seem that whenever there's an explanation of this, you know, such and such inversely moved with this stock, you know, because of the dividend, you get some explanation for it. And I suspect that a lot of that is pure speculation.
Oh, yeah.
Because there's no, they never really explained, you know, what was going on there that caused this. And they can't. I mean, they really don't know how. But they appear to make it seem as if it was the most natural movement, you know, imaginable. And I've always been very suspicious of that they're just blowing smoke at you.
Dan, they're full of crap. This whole idea this morning we're down. Oh, gee, why are we down? Well, I don't know. It might be Iran tensions. It might be this. It might be we're too high. Who the hell knows? Is your girlfriend, Erin Burnett, she's been terrific on TV since she started. What was her big thing? She cleaned it up. Opinions are like bottoms. Everybody's got one and they all stink. that's not really the word you'd use outside of TV, but we know the drift here, right? And, it's the idea of, well, why is Tesla down today? I mean, I don't know. I guess I could dig around and does it matter?
Does that have a contaminating effect on the stock the next day? I mean, is that, if that's what people are supposing or believing and act accordingly, is this some kind of strategy to, you know, recover a stock or, you know, send out a feeler? This is, well, you know, and depending on how confident you sound about it, people are going to believe you and behave, you know, as you hope they do.
Well, John, it's been going on so long, this buy-to-dip mentality. That's why I'm more nervous about this market than I've ever been in a market. Doesn't mean I'm all that bearish. I'm just, matter of fact, you know, I'm long for everybody. And we're just protected. But, and you know, up days are good days. But I'm nervous because the buy-the-dip, if we don't have a lot of people like this because I've got everybody pretty protected. But if you had somebody who, you know, put $100,000 in a stock 8 years ago and then they were either a very wise investor or had the horseshoe up there behind, one of the two, or you got in the right stock, you know, a lot of people, Apple's a life changer for a lot of people, right? A lot of people were able to get into a stock that they kind of liked at like $8 or $10, you know. And the thing's trading 255. Well, hell, that's a life saver, right? 1,000 shares of that. That's a big difference if you're a regular person, isn't it? I mean, sure it is.
Okay.
It's not when stocks have gone up and down. You know, I've been doing this for decades, right? It always seems like people lose more on the way down than they make on the way up. And I'm more worried about it this time because we have record margin debt. But if, and I'm not predicting this, if Apple went from 255 to 100, which I sure as hell hope doesn't happen. You're not just going to lose $150 every day. These guys on TV are going to be telling you to buy the dip, buy the dip. People are going to lose. It's not like they're going to lose the $900,000 they made. They're going to be buying all the way down because they think it's a buy. We talk about a weird story. God, it was 20 years ago, so I can talk about it. We had a client who was working for one of the, make that 26 years ago because it was 2000. We meet him and his wife, nice guy, she's nice, and they open up a pretty good size account here, and they were in this, I don't remember the name of the company, some dot-com place, right? So the guy's in there, I think he and his wife both work for the place, and they've got, somehow they got all these options, whatever, they pour all the stock into our place. And the guy is, so he's using his margin to sell naked puts, which means if the stock goes down, he wants to buy it lower because he's convinced the stock's going to God knows what. Now, you can sell a put and have it not be naked. I mean, you can, there's something called a cash secured put. Or say, John, if you open up an account and said, Home Depot is $3.91, just pick a stock. I'd really like to buy it at $3.50, by the way. I want to buy 1,000 shares, and here's my $350,000. I'll put that in my account. I'm going to sell the $350 puts. Well, they're not naked because you've got the money to buy them. It's called a cash secured put, right? So you can even do that in an IRA because you're going to say, I really want to be a stock buyer at $350. By the way, it's not at $350. So I'll sell somebody the ability to sell it to me there because I really want to buy it there. I mean, it's an investment decision. The problem with that is if Home Depot does go to 350, which again I'm not predicting, the world probably is going to look a hell of a lot different than it does now, right? So you might not want to be a reflex buyer at 350 if that happens. So you get to the point here where there's always something else in the conversation. But you could do it. So the guy sells all these puts. Meanwhile, him and the wife get divorced, right? So she stays a client. Oh, so does he. But she talks to Dan, my brother, and she wants to save this money. So Dan puts her on a put buying program, which protects it. And sell, I don't know if they sold calls or not, a long time ago. And so the stock goes to like zero. And of course, he gets a new girlfriend in a whole bit. So she ends up getting married again. Finally moves the account to, wherever they moved to, or I mean they went someplace. She left with 90% of her dough. And I think they finally sold the stock and just took the cash. She left with 90% of her dough. The guy is buying it all the way down. The guy had a million something account. And we're talking to him saying, what are you doing? I think when he left we sent him a check for $75. That's a number. Absolutely love the company. He was there. How could it not be perfect? Because he worked there. The stock could go from 80 to 70. He'd buy more. There was no talking to him. And he could have been right, John. It could have been Apple. It could have been. But it went from what, when Steve Jobs came back, it went, how high was it? And it went way down. And it came flying way back up. It could have been Apple, but it wasn't. There's only one Apple. There's a million stories, and it's just all a question of protecting yourself, seeing what's at risk. I mean, the mentality that I wish I could just kind of squash like a bug is if you put $10,000 into a stock and now it's worth $1 million, you have to realize that it's now $1 million investment, not a $10,000 investment. And that conversation is so hard, I've sort of given up. It is so hard. Now, explain to me why. You're more of a student of a... I mean, if you had that in your trading account in a second, you'd go, wait a minute. What am I doing? I better protect this. I don't want this going down. But it's not how retail people think. And most of the time, it doesn't hurt them. As a matter of fact, it's probably positive. But right now, I'm not so sure it is that positive. But then again, I always think that's way because it is my job to worry. So critique me here.
Well, and is that because they think, well, here's what the trajectory has been. How could that ever change? Or is it just like, I don't want to have to think about the
Fed's got my back. Here? Fed's got my back. Trump's got my back. People buy the dip. But whatever it happens to be. But, John, to go back to your original diversification question, which really is the root of a lot of what you're talking about, even though maybe you don't know that. If we were going to put your original million-dollar investment we talked about at the beginning of the show, and by the way, if Joel piles in, we'll pile him in. Now, at the end of the year, out of these 20 stocks we bought...
I'm yes. here.
Oh, good. Let me finish this up, Joel, and then we'll...
I know, morning, I got to hop. All right, finish it up, then I got to...
Oh, all right, is if we... Now, all of a sudden, out of these 20 stocks, some are going to be winners, some are going to be losers. Well, if we want to stay diversified, we actually want to sell some of the winners and buy more of the losers, right? That's so hard to do. It's so counterintuitive. But, John, thank you. Hang around in case Kenny doesn't pile, if you don't mind. Joel, sure. How are you? Number one, Michigan.
Yeah, but just a daunting stretch of basketball coming up. We're on the road at Purdue tonight. Then we're playing Duke on a neutral site.
Really?
On Saturday, 6:30 p.m. And then we have at Illinois that's ranked 8th. Okay, Minnesota at home, sprinkle that in there, and then we end up at home against the Spartans. So, yes, we're unanimous number one for the first time since 2013. But to win, you know, two out of the three next games would be important. But, man, got to love the team. The best backcourt in America, Ade Mara, Yaxel Lendenborg, and Moritz Johnson coming over from Illinois. Could it be more excited, Chief, about Michigan basketball?
Well, I'm going to watch because I want to watch Michigan. But I'm also going to – I love that kid from Illinois. That freshman's quite the special, isn't
yeah.
he?
Yeah. Yep. I'll tell you, I've had a lot of different coaches, a lot of different sports and stuff. But I think there's one coach that I wouldn't mouth off to, and that's Brad Underwood. I mean, that guy, his scrawl is just – whoo!
Yep.
Man, oh, man, oh, man.
He got into with the ref pretty good the other night when they whacked that the freshman right on top of the head. There was no foul.
Yeah. Yep. But I heard you talking about the markets, Chief, and you know what my sentiment is on those concentrated positions. I mean, you got to protect that money. You got to protect it. There's no doubt about it. Don't worry about paying Uncle Sam. You got to ring the register.
We had a guy years ago comes in and he's got. He had 10,000 shares of Exxon, right? And I go, geez, how'd you get all this Exxon? He said, my dad worked there. I said, okay. He said, so I can't really sell it. And I go, well, is your dad alive? Well, no. And I go, okay, then what do you think your dad would say if he was alive? Oh, he'd say probably sell it. I mean, it's interesting, Joel, is that you can find a lot about people. It's not my opinion, it counts as theirs, but all you have to do is ask them the question. They design their own portfolio for you. I don't mean, in terms of puts and calls, that's what I do, but in terms of people, do you think you have too much of this stock? Yeah, I do. If I gave you that kind of money today, would you go out and buy the stock this amount? Well, hell no. Well, pretty much they tell you the whole story, right?
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
What are you making this today?
I hope you didn't tell them to sell. That's making a new all-time high.
Yeah, well, so what are you making this sell off today? And just anything goes down, we got a bunch of stuff.
Gold. Oh, wait, hold on. Hold on one sec. I'm sorry. I had something else in it, but you still there, Chief?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Okay, I had something else in the background. It's just the song remains the same, Chief. I mean, they're just scooting out of this tech and into value. I mean, physical stuff. I mean, it's just a trend. It's a carryover. And, folks that are thinking, oh, we're down 27 handles. It's not that big of a deal. Did you see how much higher we were Sunday night, or were you a normal person just taking the day? I mean, we're in trouble, folks.
Yep.
This market is in trouble. I mean, yeah, maybe, this is the most violent rotation we're ever going to have, but this market is so dependent on tech. I mean, people are telling me, yeah, it's just rotation and the other 493 stocks are going to lift us up. I'm like, that is going to take a long time. And I just maybe if this big tech stops going down. I mean, first of all, before you think about it going up, it has to stop going down. So to me, just a continuation of a very disturbing trend that we've been seeing evolving over the last few months.
Joe, have you been able to grab a handle on in the seven sisters, you want to call them, or actually maybe the 10 tech stocks, the incredible rotation within the 10?
Yes. Yeah.
That's kind of new to us, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a little bit. I mean, it all depends on the AI spend, you know. And, you know, for a while, it looked like Apple was being rewarded for not having the big, AI spend. But, you know, that they're coming for Apple. NVIDIA's just been in a trading range. You think, NVIDIA, the picks, you're going to need chips, right?
Yeah.
But they've been coming for that. Microsoft peaked in October of last year, so that's nothing new. Google's starting to break down. I mean, yeah, Google was the champ, but that's breaking down. Amazon chart looks absolutely horrible. Down 9 days in a row. That hasn't happened since I don't know when. And Meta's been in the gutter too since the middle of last year. Tesla's the one that's been holding up. But yeah, you could say that there's a little bit of diversification, but they're all going down.
We have a lot of clients that have some Microsoft. Things down $150 in July from the top. That's a number.
Yes.
It was $550, and it's going down again. It's under $400. What do you make of this? I mean, is the stock broken in terms of revenue per share? It got as high as I've ever seen a stock this mature and this big. So,
yeah.
Last summer and fall, I was saying, boy, how long can they sustain this? It wasn't like I went out and bought puts or anything. I never recommend anybody get short, but God, I guess I should have. Huh?
Yeah, I mean, it's, they were the big spenders in the AI to start. They kicked it all off. So, what's it, is that spend? When's that CapEx going to come to the bottom line? And they haven't come out with anything new lately. I heard, a new rollout of some software that they had didn't go over well with some big customers. A lot of the European countries overseas, they're like, we don't want anything to do with American tech. We don't want anything to do with America whatsoever. And so they're abandoning, a lot of the U.S. technology. Now, that's not, a huge part, but just a lot of negative factors there. And, if you just want to go straight technical, these things look horrible. And so, if you've been conditioned to buying the dip on these things, well, you use the dips now as like a tactical bounce, not a trend trade. Whatever is going to happen with AI, whatever is going to go on in this world, the trend has changed in these stocks, and you got to recognize it and not stand in front of it. So,
you mentioned you don't have time or whatever to get on the political world here, but you mentioned a little bit about Europe and I'm assuming Canada. I don't know how much of Microsoft's business that is, but when you're priced to perfection, it doesn't take much, does it?
No, not at all. No, that'd be interesting to see the breakdown of that company. But anyways, Chief, I got to hop. Let's see if we can get through the next week. I'll be happy with the split when I'm talking to you next Tuesday, okay?
All right, buddy, you take care. Do we have we have Kenny?
We do.
Kenny, how are you? What's going on here? Your market is down.
I know. Can you believe it? I'm surprised that we don't get a little bit of a bounce, but I actually think we will. After the market opens, I think we will get a little bit of a bounce. I think it's, I'm not really sure why it's under pressure today. You're trying to point to, there's no economic data. There are some earnings that are coming out really starting tomorrow. So I think markets are just going to continue to digest what happened on Friday with the CPI number and what that tells us about the economy. Look, it's a big week for economic data. It's also a big week as we wind down earnings season. Although next week will be the bigger week because it's NVIDIA, so people are already starting to, you know, talk about what that's going to mean for markets in the AI trade. But as you see, it continues to be on Friday. The market broadly was in a better position. The equal weight S&P was up nearly 1.7%. The only sector down was technology. And just the NASDAQ, the Mag 7 was flat, but the broader NASDAQ came under a little bit of pressure. Not a whole lot, but was under some pressure as people still remain concerned about what this all means for AI and what it means for the market and what it means for valuations and all that stuff, all of which I think is a little bit overblown. But because I don't think the AI trade is going anywhere. I don't think it's going to blow up the way, you know, they're trying to make it seem. I don't necessarily think they're spending, I mean, they're spending a lot of money, but I think it demands it. I you know, the speed at which it changes and changes the world and changes these models, I think it's probably necessary. But in the end, I'm not super concerned about it. I'm just going to wait and see how this all plays out. But one way or the other, I'm optimistic on the market, concerned about the midterm elections and kind of the chaos that may create until we get to the summertime and we have a better sense of who the candidates all are going to be. But, you know, overall, I remain relatively bullish.
Well, I think I do too, except I'm really concerned. I think whatever the leadership appears to be doing, I can't even trace together some kind of a plan here. And I know people who are very, very pro administration say there is a big plan there, but I can't see it.
Well, what do you mean?
Economic plan. I don't see how we're going to replace some of the stuff that we're pissing off a lot of people that we import out stuff to. I mean, I think these tariffs are a huge tax on people here, and they just haven't realized it yet. I mean, I don't think we're kind of going in the right direction here in terms of getting whatever we try and do to bring business back into the country. It seems like we're going to do something else that chases it away.
Well, have the tariffs proven to be the big negative? To your point, you think it's a tax on the people. Okay, I can agree with you that there are some things that are higher prices because they're tariffs, and then I can either choose to buy them or not buy them, buy those products or not buy those products, and so I can manage that. But those tariffs have not caused the economy to spin out of control the way so many people thought it was going to a year ago, right? The economy continues to remain strong. The economic data continues to remain strong. GDP is you know, expected to run at 5% at least this first quarter. And so a lot of the economic numbers that we're seeing remain fairly robust. I don't see anything falling off the edge of the table at all, including the labor market. Look, unemployment ticked down to 4.3%, down from 4.4% at the latest NFP meeting. So I'm in a place where, while I can understand it, I don't see it, right? I don't see it's actually happening. I don't see the negativity that's come out of it. I think there's been some tweaking to the tariffs. I think there'll be continued tweaking to the tariffs. But I have yet to see that the tariffs have caused the U.S. economy to spin out of control at all.
Well, I don't think you're ever going to see it when every number gets scrubbed in the Oval Office. I mean, the numbers that you see come out, you wonder where they're coming from. I mean, you look at the unemployment number, it doesn't look horrible. And yet, you look at CNBC, you know, your old home place, and somebody writes a huge article about the amount of the long-term unemployment of people that can't find jobs is off the chart. I don't know if these guys are picking those numbers up, or the minute you come off the rolls, they're saying you're not looking again. I don't know what they're thinking.
Well, you know, I guess it also depends on who's writing the article and what's really the effort. What are they trying to present? The positive story or negative story, right? So you know, when I hear the one NFP report that shows unemployment tick down and the labor participation rate picks up, but yet unemployment didn't tick up, that tells me that there are more people entering the workforce and they're finding employment. So that's not a negative. So, you know, the person that wrote the article on CNBC, you know, what are they trying to do? Listen, it was like Friday's CPI report. It actually slowed, right? We went to plus 2.4, which was better than even the estimate and down from last month. Yet Bloomberg's headline article says CPI rose less than it rose at 2.4%. It didn't say that it was down 0.3% from last month or was down 0.1% from the expectation. It used the word rose 2.4. So that's accentuating what I view a negative story. When it's not negative, in my mind, it is down. It is absolutely a positive story. And what they should have said is that CPI falls again. That would have been the way the story should have been presented.
Well, first of all, it didn't.
But what do you mean it didn't?
I mean, if I'm going to look at, if I could take a, I should go back in time in my archives. If you'd have taken a Kenny Polcari of 8 years ago and somebody would have said, we're not going to accentuate what the CPI was last month, we're going to do year over year, you'd look at him and you'd laugh at him. You'd say, why would we do that? Why does anybody care what happened a year ago? It's what happened last month. But now we've all been
but they're giving you both numbers. They're giving you the month-over-month number and the year-over-year number, they always have.
What was the month-over-month unadjusted? 0.4.
Was it? Hold on a minute. Was it 0.4? Was that in line with the expectation?
No. They adjusted it down to 0.2. The unadjusted number was 0.4. Well, 0.4 times 12 is 4.8.
Okay, that's interesting. If the unadjusted, because I'm looking at what the actual number they reported. They reported 0.2.
Yeah, the unadjusted number was 0.4. Who the hell does the adjustment?
Okay, so, well, and what is the adjustment, What was the adjustment? I guess that's the question.
Well, they go down.
I didn't see the unadjusted number of 0.4. Where did you see that? Because I don't see it.
I'm kick it right up here. It's right on the table. Top line. Let me find it. It's a, every month I it's one of my usual rants, believe it or not, Kenny, is where are we here? U.S. economic. I know I got it here. Inflation. Where am I? A1 unemployment status. Table 1, consumer price index. Top line is unadjusted percent December to January 0.4. Seasonally adjusted percent 0.2.
Okay, look at that. Okay, so what is the unadjusted number? Like, what are the adjustments that caused it to go from 0.4 to 0.2? I don't know.
That's a good question. I mean, you can go down a list. It's in every column. They've got gasoline, minus 2.5, adjusted minus 3.2. Okay. Energy services up 1.4, adjusted 0.2. I don't know. Yeah. Every month when this comes out, Kenny, I sit there and go, I know Kenny Polcari's actually one of the guys on the show. His mom used to do this for CPI.
Yeah.
In Cleveland.
Okay, but let me ask you a question. If every month we're looking at the same numbers every month, then that's what the market is conditioned to look at. That's what economists, everyone is conditioned to discuss. Then can't you say if those numbers are going down, then those numbers are going down? Whether it's adjusted or unadjusted, if we're using the adjusted number every month, then you got to look at the adjusted number. If we were using the unadjusted number every month, I'd say that's fine. But we're not. Now, I'd be curious to see what the unadjusted number was a year ago, right, versus what it is today. Is it coming down? Is the trend, even though it's unadjusted and it shows that it's 0.4%, was it 0.8% a year ago? So is the trend still lower the way the adjusted number is? Because that would be what's important.
Well, here's one of the lines, electricity. Unadjusted 1.6 to the positive, adjusted minus 0.1. Do you know anybody whose electric bill went down?
I don't know anybody whose electric bill went down, including
mine. Yeah.
Actually, I'm lying. My electric bill last month went down because it was cool down here in Florida. Yeah. And I wasn't running my conditioner. But the electric rate has not gone down. No, it has not gone down.
Well, Kenny, my bitch on this whole thing is that we're so close, and you are, you're given, by the way, a really good rendition of one of the arguments. And one of the dudes was on CNBC the other day, and he goes, this is before his 2.4 number, but he was talking about a 2.7 CPI year over year. And he said, well, you know, wages are up 3%, hourly wages are 3.1, whatever it was. He said, so people are gaining, but just a little bit. Actually, it was like 3.2 or whatever. He's gaining, but just a little bit. All you have to do, Kenny, is flip the inflation number up to 4, which I think I could easily prove. I could probably do 5. we're right on the edge. So whatever, whether you're a believer or not, I mean, it's not like the numbers, everybody's admitting it's 5, and you and I are arguing whether it's 4.8 or 5.2. We're arguing really over a long period of time over whether it's below wage growth or above. And the government, through 5 different presidents, keeps telling us it's below wage growth, and that's bull. It is bull. Inflation has been higher than great wage growth for 25 years. And it's
if that's the case, and I'm not debating that it's not the case, then why isn't that the number we're looking at? Because it doesn't fit the narrative, is that correct?
Right.
Doesn't fit the narrative. So once again, you know, they're gonna push the narrative they want you to believe.
But they didn't, they's I don't think used to lie about this as much as they do. I mean, look at two lines, Kenny. I mean, I don't want to go through them, but I don't know what's going on in the electricity line. It seems odd to me. Just one that popped out. But why exactly? You've been, well, we've all had our medical issues, right?
Yeah.
Do you think that medical part is 6.5% of the basket when it's 20% of the economy?
Do I think it's 20% of the economy? Yeah, that's probably about,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, well, it's 6% of the CPI basket.
6% of the basket.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Well, if the CPI would have had medical as 20%,
yeah,
going back to 2000,
yeah,
I'm going to say we've been in a recession every year.
Correct. Okay, but that's right. But But that's not the number that they're using. That's not, certainly we have not been in a recession. If you turn around and look at the other data, if you look at how the economy has performed, we've not been in a recession.
Well, I'm talking about there's a bunch of stuff going here, and this is why I'm obviously, I'd love to have guys like you on to get me back from off the plank. There's all kinds of stuff. We're putting money into the system. So we have this general inflation. You know, we've averaged what? 6-8% money supply growth in the last 25 years, or is it 5 or 6%, whatever it is, and the growth has been like 2. So we've had this inflation of 3-4% since really 2000, accelerating after 2007, and
yeah,
and you see people gagging all over. I mean, you look at individual lines like the other one, and I'm not asking anybody because I don't know. Is brown rice really 40 cents or is it 45? I have no idea. But I'll tell you, just take two of them out of there. One is medical, and the other one is your owner's equivalent rent. It's up like 1.8 in however many since 2007. Housing prices are up three times. They're not even close.
I agree.
Well, okay,
agree.
So how do you
housing prices have to... Housing prices have to come down.
Okay, but...
Housing prices have gotten way, way... out of whack, but that's because they kept rates at zero for 18 years.
Well, okay.
Now they have to come down.
Right, but my point is, if you look at the numbers like that and you say, well, here's two massive holes in there, then you can't go to the guy in CNBC and go, gee, it looks to me like inflation's 2.4 and everybody's wages are going up 3. It looks like everybody's okay. No, they're not. Not if they have any kind of health issue.
Yeah, right.
or they live in a house. I mean, what are they talking about? You can't take two shit numbers and make a good number out of it, can you?
Well, you can't. Although some people are very good at doing that.
Well, yeah. I wish I was that good at it, Kenny. Why is it some people can come up with a line of BS and everybody leaves it, and other people, as soon as they say something, they don't like the guy? But isn't that, you know, I mean, actually, you have a personality. If you show up late for something, everybody's happy to see you. Somebody else shows up late, you're late.
That's right. They're mad at them.
Yeah, they're mad at them. I don't know. I've always been in the mad at them part. You're probably not happy to see you part. What can I tell you? Hey, I got a quick specific question about some of the stocks that my people have. I have people that have concentrated issues, and some of these, I'll use it, international, well, Microsoft's one of them, Apple's one of them, but a lot of them in like your Accentures and your OMCs, these international consulting and marketing firms, even IBM in the last few months. God, Kenny, they're getting their ass kicked. Is that political? What is that? I mean, nobody wants to hire a Pete Marwick over in Europe to do all their systems for them, or is it AI? Is it just they don't want to make a long-term commitment with an American company, or are they even American companies? I don't even know. I mean, all I know is they're all getting their ass kicked.
That's an interesting question. I don't know. I don't think it's necessarily because, you know, they're American companies. I'd like to think that's not the case.
Well, I hope so too. Yeah.
You know, but is it the role that AI is playing, or are people just kind of trying to sit back and wait and see, how that unfolds? Or they want to commit now and then, you know, be caught behind the eight ball because AI changes so quickly? So is it just a matter of being a little bit more patient to see how this unfolds? I don't know. It's an interesting question, though.
Well, I mean, it gets into the politics a little bit, in that, you know, I don't know that some of the stuff that the administration's doing and kind of shaking things up, you know, some of it I absolutely agree with some of the problems. The solutions I think are pretty half-assed thought out, but I focus in on, Kenny, if I'm going to have a company, or if it's a big company, guys that hire, you know, the guys from Accenture and these kinds of places, Marsh McLennan, where all of a sudden you got, you know, 50 people in there totally redoing your whole system over a 3-year project and stuff. I tell you what, unless I really need it, I'm going to wait on that for a while. I don't see what is my urgency to go out with that sort of investment right now, given what's going on. I it's not about, you know, Trump's policy here or some policy. I just think the future has gotten so murky on all different levels that I don't know that you can make that kind of a commitment. I was at a party, or a buddy, Dr. J, at a party, Super Bowl, and one of the ladies there, she works for Fermilabs, of all places, and her daughter was a rower, so I always keep track of how she did in her rowing and stuff. Anyway, I said, what is she? She's worked for, I don't think it was Accenture, but it's one of those firms that always has, you know, they call it the big bench, you know, where if you need a, you know, if you're an exchange and you need a systems project and you need 30 people, they'll come for a year, fix it, teach your people how to use it, and leave. But because they have what they call a bench, they can show up with 30 people the next day. She goes, well, she's on the bench at one of these firms, and there's no business. She goes, all the bench thinks they're going to be off the bench pretty soon. Nobody's making these, you know, 6-month to 3 or 4 years commitments in advancing their systems and things like that. Maybe they're waiting for AI. Maybe they're concerned about, you know, the economy. Maybe they're concerned about whatever the company is considered, a U.S. or British company. I don't know, Kenny, but there's a hesitation here that I see that appears it's not healthy, and I can't put my finger on it. Think I'm wrong on this or not?
No, I don't think you're wrong. I think the hesitation is because I think there's just broad hesitation. I think the markets are anxious. I think companies are anxious about, you know, where this is going, whether it's the U.S. economy, whether it's a global economy. I mean, look what happened in, what did I read this morning? Was it the U.K. or was it European unemployment that was higher than the expectation? So I think there's some nervousness just around, individual countries. And so I think they're just being cautious. Which I understand, just because it's appears to be setting up to be kind of a volatile year for both markets as well as policy. So I think they're just being cautious.
Well, because I think at the end of the day, and some of the words that the administration has been using about stuff being brought overseas and why was it, and I mean, you know, a lot of it was brought over because you don't have any labor laws, and oh, by the way, you can pollute all you want to. Well, that's a problem, you know. But instead of some sort of a rational way to even that up, we just kind of, you know, shoot barbs at people. At the end of the day, you know, is somebody here, if you and I had a machine shop and business picked up a little bit, is it sustainable? Are you and I going to say that building next door, we need that building, or we need addition on our place, we're going to go out and buy these machines, they're $500,000 a piece. I mean,
right.
Can we get the financing? Do we have the confidence that 18 months from now, we're going to still be busy, and can we get the financing at a reasonable rate and blah, blah, blah? There's a question. I used to do this, Kenny. There's 10 questions there, and I'm going to ask, and I got news for you. I can't answer 8 of them. If I'm that guy, if I went back the 40-year-ago chief and stuck me back at Pullman, I'm telling you, the answer is no. I can't count on it.
Well, I think that's true. I think there are people that are more concerned, and that goes right to the kind of the AI story. I think people are concerned about where is this going to go, and what jobs are going to be left, and what jobs are going to be new, what jobs are going to be old, what jobs are going to be eliminated, right? Because that is the narrative, which is why, you know, kind of tech in the market, well, tech for sure is coming under pressure, but the market, different sectors of the market. You know, last week it was legal and financial services. Pretty soon it's going to be metal. It's going to be insurance, right? Because AI is going to continue to make its way through all these industries. So I do think that there is that level of nervousness causing some cautiousness and concern.
Are you believing the, I won't say, the AI BS? There was a group here in Chicago. It wasn't Challenger Gray. It was somebody else. It's in one of these international employment places, and they go, out of all the people in the last 4 months that were laid off because of AI, 66% of the companies didn't even have AI. It's just the excuse.
Well, I think it's convenient because they can now, because it's the whole topic. That's what everyone's going to use, whether it's true or not. If they're looking to scale down or they're looking to reorg, they can always say it's AI for sure, 100%. So I fully expect that that's going to continue to be the story. I don't think it's going to be. I don't think that AI story is as negative as it's making it to be. But to your point, it's convenient. Everyone can use it and get away with it. They can use it as cover for layoffs or scaling down or reorganizing, for sure, 100% they can.
So PTA,
expect to hear about it certainly in financial services. You're going to start to see it. You're going to start to see it in the legal profession. They've already said it. That in case that will really affect it, but there are other places, to your point, where it's not going to be affected so much, but yet they'll figure out a way to kind of weave it into the story.
Boy, a couple of my attorney buddies have said they've read some briefs from people that they could tell right away it was done by AI. So he goes, these guys are going to get sued. These things are awful. I mean, just because you have AI doesn't mean you. Plus, we got a dash here, but one of these days, how does AI get into? Where is? I can't break into somebody's law firm and use their stuff. I can't break into a university law library. I mean, how does AI get into all this crap?
Well, maybe you can. I mean, they were just talking about it. As a matter of fact, they were talking about it on CNBC this morning about cybersecurity risks and about, the constant and the risk almost increases every day because the AI gets smarter, the technology gets smarter, and so you have to really worry about being hacked or being, doing exactly what you said you don't think can happen. You have to be prepared for the fact that it could happen unless the cybersecurity sector stays one step ahead of what's happening in AI and what's happening in hacks, right? So I think it's going to be a very interesting story, and I think that's going to continue to fuel the cybersecurity story for sure this year into next year, because I think that's going to be one of the focuses.
So where are you on TV today?
Today I'm not.
Whoa! It's the market's open. You're not on TV. What's going on?
No, I'm not on TV today. I'm on TV on Friday on Varney. I don't know. I'm waiting to see if I'm on TV tomorrow. I haven't heard back yet, but no, I'm on TV on Friday morning with Varney for sure.
When you're on with usually I'm with Maria once a week, aren't you? Or is it?
I was on Maria last week. I was on Maria last Wednesday. But yeah, when you're on with Maria, if you're doing the 3-hour segment, you have to be in New York. You have to be in the studio. If I do just the one segment, like when they talk about stocks, it's a 5-minute segment, I can be remote. But I was on with her last week for the whole 3 hours, so
But then we get the full Kenny. We get the gestures. We get everything else when you're on TV.
Yes, you do.
She's a nice lady.
I got to jump.
Okay, she's a nice lady. I met her years ago.
She's great. She's great. I've known her since she came to the floor of the New York Stock Exchange when she was about 28 years old. She's great.
Well, she's not 28, and we're not that young either.
No, I'm going to be 65 next month.
Oh, God. Well, we're going to celebrate that. Take care of yourself. Yeah, right. SP Futures now down 38, NASDAQ Futures down 253. Ricky, want to go like a 2-second break, and then we'll bring Hal on?
Copy that.
All right, we'll be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Going up back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm talking about Ricky on the board. Real quick, S&P futures down 37. NASDAQ futures down 250. We'll have a full break at 7:30. We have Professor Hal.
Hey, Tom, I like the Dean Martin you have going on.
I love Dino.
Oh, Dino is the best. I had a town car when I was in my PhD program. And I'd take my niece, Madison. I'd pick her up and drop her off at school because her mom worked and her dad worked. And I'd head up to Washington State University my last semester. And we'd play Dino every morning in my town car.
Wow.
She was probably, I don't know. Was she probably a third grader? And we used to play his party song because it sounded like Maddie.
Wow.
Yeah, I love Dino. Dino's the coolest, man.
Where was he from?
He was from Ohio, wasn't he?
Steubenville.
Steubenville, Ohio, right?
Yeah. I think he worked in a pizza place or something. Somebody realized he could.
Yeah, he was ethnic Italian, and you couldn't.
Oh God, yeah.
You couldn't. I don't think you could tell what by the way he spoke at all. But he was ethnic Italian, and I don't think he knew English when he was a young kid. They only spoke Italian in his household, I think, if I remember right.
Yeah, he was.
And back then, that mattered, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
He was a interesting sort. My grandmother, Italian, of course. Well, on that side was Italian. Every week, I'm going to get Dino on the TV.
Well, we used to watch the Jerry Lewis and Dean Martin movies on Saturday afternoons when Fox before Fox took over all the independent channels.
Yep.
They had these independent channels. We had one in the Nampa, Boise, southwestern Idaho area. And Jerry Lewis and Dean Martin movies would come on every Saturday, along with The Lone Ranger, every morning before school.
Oh, God, I still watch some of those on YouTube.
Oh, man, that was such a blast watching those movies.
Yeah. Did you ever find out his name, The Lone Ranger?
No, huh? No.
You know his brother's name?
Nah, the actor?
No, the brother who got killed.
Actual character.
Yeah, why he became The Lone Ranger.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know the backstory at all.
Oh, God, you gotta watch the first two.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Oh, God,
well,
yeah.
You know what? When you're a little kid, you're watching it, and you're in sixth grade, those kind of details. Because all you care about is the shoot-em-up scenes, right?
Well, he was a young Texas Ranger. And his brother led a group to go get the famous Cavendish Gang, which, you know, killed everybody.
Oh, wow.
And there was a guy who was their scout that came and said he knew where they were, but he was like a double dealer. And he led them into this canyon, and the whole troop got picked off by the Cavendish Gang, and everybody got killed.
Wow.
Except for him. And they thought he was dead, because Cavendish said, keep shooting until they stop moving. It was a pretty brutal scene back on old TV. And he was damn near dead, and along came... essentially, Tano.
Like the Outlaw Josie Wales movie.
Yeah, well, along came Tano. Yeah. But the backstory there was that years ago, Tano had been injured. And the young Lone Ranger came by and found him and nursed him back to health.
Oh, wow.
So Tano showed up, saw it was him, and they ended up putting graves for everybody there. And they actually put a grave for him. With his name on it.
Yeah, I don't think I ever remember seeing the pilot.
Yeah, so. they put a grave there for him. So everybody thought he was dead. So when he became the Lone Ranger, nobody knew who he was, but he was a Texas Ranger.
Yeah, wow.
And then he came across, Silver had been in a fight with a buffalo, and he nursed Silver back to health. Silver is an incredible animal. But you know, one of the backstories was Silver and Scout didn't get along.
Oh, really?
Whenever they were sitting next to each other, they were always on... a prop. They were never on a horse. They didn't like.
Well, yeah, you know, horses. If they're two male horses, they're not going to get along at all.
Yeah, not much. And so here's the list of Las Vegas Convention and Visitors Authority who have had the Las Vegas light dim in honor of their death. It's a short list, boy. Elvis Presley, Sammy Davis Jr., Dean Martin, George Burns, Frank Sinatra, actually Jerry Tarkanian, the UNLV basketball coach, and Don Rickles. And really only four other spots. Boy, I couldn't name these. John Kennedy. The first time the casinos paid this tribute, dimmed all the lights on the strip for a minute when he got shot. Ronald Reagan. The October first shooting victims were the strip. You know, all those people got killed there.
Yeah.
And then the September 11 attacks. That's quite a list.
Yeah.
But the people who the Elvis Presleys of the world were people who took care of everybody on the strip. I mean, I went to who the hell was the guy? He was Mr. Vegas. Okay, I can't remember his name. He was the guy. He was there forever. Did some jokes, sang, had the horse.
More of a comedian.
Yeah, well, no, but then he did some of that anyway. Yeah. He did his last show, and he goes, "Tonight I'm not taking my check. All the money's going to the tips for the waitresses and everybody. So tip heavy, add to the list." It's those guys. The real guys there knew they took care of the help, right?
Yeah.
I mean, Dean Martin was supposedly one of those generous people.
Well, you can't take that money with you, so
yeah.
Why not, right?
Dean Martin was one of those generous people there, and they loved Sammy Davis Jr.
Yeah.
After he wasn't allowed in for a while.
Yeah, Frank and Dino were great with all that.
Yeah. So what do you make of markets down heavy now? The S&P futures are down 36, NASDAQ 246. If you're listening on Kenny and me, and I just... It's not like I don't believe any of these numbers. I look at what individual people are saying.
I think it's important to note that we've talked about this for, I don't know, 10. Has it been 10 years?
Pretty close. More than 10 years. Pretty close.
Yeah, I think it's important to note that we haven't trusted these numbers over at least 10 years. And when I started teaching macro, I was like, you know, I didn't buy them. And this is the interesting thing about the inflation number. I don't know who did it, whether it was intentional or not, but for some reason the definition of inflation was altered. It was altered from an excessive increase in the money supply to increase in prices. Increase in prices is a symptom of inflation. Inflation is an excessive expansion of the money supply. And
prices are the way you keep count.
Yeah. The government benefits from this change in definition because now the blame is on the evil corporations for raising prices, not on them for inflating the currency. So we always have to keep in mind that inflation is an excessive increase in the money supply, and that prices, how prices change, that's a result of an increase in demand, a decrease in supply, or a combination of the two. That's what's causing prices to change. And if you define inflation as an increase in prices, then you also have to consider all of the rules and regulations that restrain the economy, or the subsidies that tend to push prices up in healthcare and education. And anytime you subsidize something, you're going to get higher prices. So if we're going to talk about price increases, we have to talk about all the government interventions, not just the increase in the money supply. We got to talk about the restrictions that result in less supply that otherwise would have occurred had those restrictions not been put in place. And those things are everywhere. In Oregon, one of the reasons why home prices are so high in Oregon is because they have these green space laws that prevent development in any area that is considered green. And so you have very little land to build and develop. So those kinds of things cause prices to go up too. So if you're going to talk about price increases, you have to talk about all of government interventions.
Well, I'm going to
help those prices.
Can I split this in half? What you're talking about, and maybe you agree. Correct my paper here, Professor. Professor Little Milty. By the way,
I prefer Murray. I love Murray, but hey, Milty's great too. I love him in the interviews.
Does this sound like you? Inflation is always and everywhere a monetary phenomenon.
Yeah, it's actually in my macro book that I wrote years ago.
A phrase coined by Milton Friedman.
My macro book that I wrote years ago was probably 12 years ago. I wrote two versions of it, and it's where I started really getting into the different schools of thought. Before that, I was just a neoclassical economist, and I didn't really understand the schools of thought until I moved to Westminster University in Salt Lake City, where history of economic thought was a big part of the program, and I didn't understand why. I was essentially a mathematician doing economics, like a lot of PhD economists. And when I wrote that book, I started delving into history of economic thought. And then I realized how important it is to understand how economic thought has evolved over time.
Well, one of these days, I really pissed the hell out of you, but I want to bring in Monetary History of the United States by Milton Friedman.
Yeah.
And I cannot make...
Can you imagine the number of people it took to build that
God.
Thing?
Well, that's what I was going to say. A couple of the charts...
You'd have to have a serious grant for that thing.
Some of the charts earlier in the book, just what they defined everything as, hot money, those kind of... I just want to go through it to see if you can help me with those things. But here, what else... Can I split this in half? How can I find a bunch of those together? And I've always felt everything was maybe because I had Milty as my teacher. I always split them apart. When Milton Friedman talks about it's a monetary phenomenon, if all of a sudden everybody said, okay, go to the Federal Reserve, bring in your Washington and come out, who's on the $2 bill? Is it Jefferson?
Jefferson's on the $2 bill, right?
Okay, bring in your $1 bill, come out with a $2 bill.
Yeah.
I think everybody would understand if all of a sudden every checking account doubled, everything doubled, that the price of everything, it would be like a stock split, right? You double the amount of shares, guess what? The price goes down by two, right?
Yeah.
So the stock was $80, now tomorrow morning opens at 40. That's a general inflation level that Milton Friedman's talking about and Hal's talking about. If you pour money into the system, you haven't increased the value of anything. All you did was double the amount of dollars in everybody's pocket.
Yeah, the price of the movie theater would double.
Right, everything. Your wages hopefully would double. Somebody probably find a way to not do that.
But that's not how it works.
No, but
the Kantian effect says.
I know that, but
the people who touch the money first.
But even if your money supply was dead even, there's always going
to
be
somehow you could distribute this money equally to everybody.
No, I'm
all
saying
prices and wages would double, and nobody would be better off.
Yeah, but that would never happen.
And that's a big if.
Right, but that's one hunk of the theory. The other hunk is, what about prices going up and down every day? Well, to me, that's a healthy economy. Because in theory...
when prices are flexible, that is healthy.
Because the idea is if all of a sudden... Yeah.
Prices are supposed to be able to go up and down.
Well, even where if, say, nothing happened to the money supply, which, again, it never happens this way. If there's an oil embargo, and all of a sudden gas goes from 50 cents to a buck, and everybody's whining about it, well, Hal could do this better than me. All of a sudden, people start spending a little bit more on gasoline. They're going to spend a little less on everything else. So everybody else's, all the other zillion products that are out there are going to see their demand curve drop just a hair. So in theory, the dollar, the $20 more a month you don't spend on gas, you're going to get back somewhere else because everybody else had to drop their price of this one, 2 cents, 4 cents, whatever. And so, right? I mean, so the individual moves up, but you can't say the price level's up because chicken's up. It's an idiotic statement, right?
Yeah.
It could be the price of chicken is up, but maybe something else, or people have to spend more for chicken, they're going to spend less somewhere else. So there's
all kinds of substitutions people do.
But that's a sign of an exceptionally healthy economy. That's not what you and I are talking about. You and I are talking about we're putting too many dollars in so that the total level is going up. And if it goes up 5% of you, and that's why I was talking to Kenny, these guys, whether you think the economy is doing great or isn't, it's so narrow. Okay, inflation's 2.4%, which it isn't. People's hourly wages are going up 3%, so guess what? Everybody's doing better. God, hell, we're so tight. How many fat ladies can dance on the head of a pin? We're right. It's not like, wages are going up 8 and inflation's 1. I mean, we're not even anywhere near that, are we? We're talking about somebody gained 0.2% last year from two different government numbers, neither one of which we believe. What is that exactly?
Yeah, I think the more appropriate number is just to look at the general, maybe a smooth M2 growth rate through time. That's probably the best way to gauge where inflation is, in my opinion. And the latest M2 numbers, I think we spoke about it 2 weeks ago. By the way, how's Ricky doing?
He's all fine. He's here.
Okay, cool. Awesome. Hey, Ricky.
Hey, you know,
is that fireboard bothering you?
What's up?
That's from John Cusack's Better Off Dead from the 1980s, one of my favorite movies.
Oh, I see.
Well, what is that Meyer boy bothering me?
Is there a... well, go ahead what you were saying. I'm looking something up here.
Yeah, well, you know, it's just... M2, you know, you just look at M2 and maybe subtract out the population increase. And I think you get a good feel for what inflation's doing. Now, is M2 a good metric? No, I mean, I don't think any of these metrics are very good, but it's probably the least bad of the metrics we could use for gauging what inflation is. So, and I have inflation, I think, around 5% right now. That's where I have it.
Well, the
I think you have to smooth the M2 out over a long period of time, and maybe you have a long run. You wait a long run average to a short run average to get a better feel for inflation, but somehow you got to use M2 smooth through time. And that I think that gives you the best feel for what inflation is doing. Because the CPI, I mean, to me, calling inflation the percent change in the CPI takes all the blame off of government and places it on corporations for being evil for raising their prices.
Well, it ought to be pretty simple.
Yeah.
You would think, right?
Yeah.
I mean...
I think a lot of time what government does... I worked for government. I worked for government in the United States Navy. And I think they tend to like to overcomplicate things. And I think it may be just a bureaucracy thing. Maybe it's because they don't really have a customer. I mean, they get all their money from forced confiscation through taxation. If you don't pay your taxes, you go to jail. So in that kind of system, you know, you're not disciplined by the market. So you kind of invent things, and things tend to get overly complicated. So, you know, I think the market always has to discipline. And if you're not in an industry where the market disciplines, then you're receiving all kinds of false signals. Like at a state university in New York, where the tuition is essentially free for anybody under a household income of $200,000. That's going to create an artificial demand for education services at CUNYs and SUNYs. And so what does that do to the professors teaching, say, coding or whatnot? They're going to use the same materials they've been using for 30 years because they have this artificial demand created by this cap and price that government set on in-state tuition. So well, you have to be disciplined by the market. If you're not being disciplined by the market, you think your service, your product has higher demand than it actually does.
Well, when you talk about stuff that the government does, you know, Ricky, don't start playing Andy Mayberry on me here, but you used to be able to believe some of them. Now, it's been a degradation.
I can believe these numbers probably 15, 20 years, ever since I started looking at them objectively. I just don't buy them.
Well, that's
I think the one thing you can do with the numbers is see how they change from period to period. I think the direction is the only thing that you can take with a grain of salt. Well, but I think the rest of it is you can't really use it.
When you don't, they're supposed to be able to be used for a lot of different reasons. And when I say this, I'll go back to my Pullman days.
Yeah, it's not the percent change itself. It's what are the percent changes doing? Are they generally rising?
No.
Are they generally staying the same, or are they generally falling? I think the only thing they can use with these numbers.
Yeah, what I'm saying is if done properly, there's a lot of uses to them. No.
Yeah, but I don't think they can be done properly because they need to be misdefined. That therefore, to get more and more people trapped in these higher and higher tax brackets, as we talked about.
I get that, but I'm saying one of my jobs at Pullman was everything back in the late 70s or mid to late 70s, early 80s, was indexed for inflation. Every union contract, everything, which means the number was important to people.
Yeah.
So when I was, you know, like I say this every day, for God's sake, if the inflation was 1% last month, I'd call a guy up in Boston and say, guess what, we just added $60,000 to the bill. And he goes, looks right to me. And then, the guy with the truck contract, the guy with the air conditioning contract, the unions, everybody get their piece in a 1%. But if you don't, but now what if, I'll tell this to my right-wing friends because they don't think Trump's a flat-ass liar. But then again, Biden and these other guys have done the same thing. Now, if you and I, Hal and Chief Construction, oh God, can you imagine that? We'd bring Ricky along with. If we
I'd actually like to do it. I love construction.
Oh, I would love to do it.
I love building things.
But if you and I contracted, you know, some knave 10 years ago to buy him to build 5 houses a year for 10 years.
That'd actually be a fun job.
Oh, sure
I'd love it.
Sure would. I'd love to do that. But now if we were to say, okay, we're going to sell you this house for $300,000, and it costs us, at the time, $265,000 to make it, or $250,000. So we're going to make 5 houses. You know, you and I are going to make whatever. And we said, okay, but every year we're going to use the CPI to upgrade the price. I'm going to say that Hal and Chief, Ricky Construction, is out of business 3 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
There's no way on earth that with using the CPI as our table or our calculation that we're still in business. And it's supposed to be able to do that, right?
Yeah, you know, this is an interesting thing. I think what you're saying is that the CPI seemed better in the 1970s.
It was better.
So it was better. Let's just take that. Now, think about this as a corporation. In our government cartelized industries, these industrial powers, they want to cut costs. And what is one way they can cut costs? They can lobby government. I'm not sure if this happened, but it's there. There's this incentive to do this. But suppose these industrialists who want to cut costs lobby their politicians or lobby government in some way to alter the cost of living metric.
For them, it's way better.
So that they don't have to embed such high increases in these contracts.
Well, do you think any of these contracts even have inflation? I think none of them do.
Well, no, but if in the 1970s, I can see industrialists who are paying 9% higher this year than the previous year on their labor contract, asking government to alter the way they compute inflation. Therefore, when they sign their next contract, they don't have to provide as high as an increase.
Yeah, the only problem is that they have the same number that we got as an increase in price from Boston is the same number we paid out to labor.
Yeah.
So, you know, we were...
I can see that lobbying going on. I mean, that kind of lobbying
goes on. Yeah, but if you use the same number for both, you don't get any place. Yeah. Hey, we got to go to a break here, but you know, it's... Well, I mean, you and I in the construction business, I'd love it, but, you know, it's...
I would like to buy old properties and...
Oh, me too.
And fix them up. I love fixing them up and tearing down and rebuilding. It's so much fun.
I think it's a lot of fun. But everybody is talking about the lack of housing right now.
Yeah.
And the phenomenon here, I mean, I keep up on this a little bit because I know people that are always remodeling their places. The idea is if we just had more houses, if you had more houses, the price of the houses would go down. I'm going to say, you know, that statement comes from a bunch of idiots that have no idea what the prices are. Do you know anybody now? Maybe it's getting close because these prices of houses are getting pretty high. Do you know any house right now that you could, maybe in some of the neighborhoods, I'll back up a little bit here, that you could duplicate the house for the selling price?
Yeah.
I can't. Yeah. I mean, Audrey's got a nice...
Well, again, why is that? Because government rules and regulations...
Well, but I'm saying
artificial scarcities that drive up prices.
Well, the price...
And this is not a Republican-Democrat thing. This is just a general government thing.
But right now,
it creates scarcities with these rules and restrictions. It restrains the economy. What we need to do is, instead of trying to grow the bonsai tree in the little pot, we need to take that tree seed out of that little pot and throw it in the backyard, and the potential for growth in the backyard is much greater, but there's more risk.
I could see you with a bonsai tree.
Hey, I love Mr. Miyagi.
Oh, yeah. S&P Futures down 30.
I say you do.
S&P Futures down 30, NASDAQ Futures down 223. Is that the... Same kind of shit. Didn't Admiral Yamamoto have one of those things too?
Oh, he probably did. Yeah,
he was into that. We'll be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
Listen, are you a 50-year-old person looking for term life insurance? Then you need to talk to Bob. Bob specializes in helping people find $1 million or more of term life insurance for a couple of $100 a month. Look, you need to know there's a price war in the term life insurance business, and you may be paying too much. Call Bob, and he'll shop and see how much money he can save you. Look, this could be the last term life insurance policy you ever have. Your rates are guaranteed for the next 20 years. That's right, guaranteed level rates for the next 20 years. And if you're a smoker or your health is not perfect, Bob has great rates for you too. So for $1 million of term life insurance coverage for a couple of $100 a month, call Bob right now. 800-989-1415. 800-989-1415. 800-989-1415. That's 800-989-1415. Paid for by Term Direct.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now.
Right now. Well, we're Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tamara Rickey on the board. SP Futures down 30. Yeah, 30. NASDAQ Futures down 220. Not a good day for if you're long here, at least so far. Maybe we'll bounce. Who the hell knows? I don't know. Over in Europe, we've got, I hit the wrong button. I'll get back to Europe here. I managed to get Ricky, why don't you do a traffic, weather, sports? No, here we go. And I'll be back. Why don't you do traffic, weather, sports, and I'll be back to Europe.
Copy that. Good morning, Chief. It's currently 7:36 a.m. here in Chicago. We're looking at 44 degrees right now with a high of 50. Mostly cloudy and cold. Tonight will be mostly breezy with occasional rain and a possible thunderstorm late this evening and a low of 49 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 56 degrees right now with a high of 69. A couple of showers this morning, otherwise clouds followed by a brightening sky. And tonight, mostly cloudy with a low of 50 degrees. Let's talk about traffic real quick. There was an accident reported on Fullerton Parkway at North Damon Avenue, causing some heavy traffic along Kennedy. Edens looks pretty clear though. There's another accident reported on the right shoulder eastbound on Eisenhower at Holman Avenue, exit 26B. So expect some delays there. Heavy traffic inbound on Stevenson. Southbound is pretty clear, and some stop and go traffic northbound on Den Ryan. Let's talk sports real quick. The NHL is on break at the moment for the Winter Olympics, but matches will start Wednesday, February 25. And lastly, there's no NBA games until Thursday, where the Bulls face off against Raptors in Chicago at 7 p.m. And also, we have the Suns at Spurs at 7:30 p.m. That's all I got for you.
Back so anxious to get the Bulls back in there if they can lose again.
Totally.
Yeah, just over Europe, we got the DAX up 42 cents. Call that flat. FTSE up 32.3. CAC around down 6.08. So not much going on there. Asia Nikkei down 239.4%. Hang Seng up 138.5. Shanghai up down 51. 1.3%. Bonds down 2 basis points, 4.03. So bonds interest rates have been pretty steady at 10-year, actually, but down a little bit. The bond down 2%, 2.72. We have oil up a little bit, 53 cents, 63.42. Gold, however, whack. Gold's down 108, 49.38. So obviously under 5,000. Silver down 380. That's almost 5%, 74.18. And we've got crypto down to $1.75, 68,029. So, hell, with all these numbers flying around, I get the feeling that everybody, all the people here running for office, and there's a lot of people running for Durbin's seat in the Senate, every representative.
Oh, really? How many people run for Durbin?
At least, what do you think, Ricky? There's got to be at least four, right?
Wow.
3 to 4?
I think something like that.
And you get all these reps running, and
I don't think a Republican has a chance of winning in Illinois, right?
Well, we've had Republican senators before, but probably not this time.
There's no chance for one in California.
No. Yeah. Well, I don't know. Well, Ronald Reagan was a Republican governor, right?
Yeah, but that was a long time ago. That was the 60s.
Yeah, now things are becoming fairly... of course, back in those days, the difference between Republican and Democrat wasn't that much.
Yeah. Oh, there wasn't. Yeah, there wasn't that much now. Yeah.
What do you make of the... incredible, I don't want to call it carnage, over this Epstein stuff. All these people dropping in all these industries and countries.
Yeah, to me, you know, I always thought that I never bought how he died in prison. I just don't believe it. Most of the stuff that government says...
What do you mean? He got killed.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, he got killed, yeah. He didn't commit suicide. No, let's just be honest. So, I mean, why? Because killing him in prison protects all these very powerful people. So is it surprising? Not at all. And I think when you run in those kinds of circles, there's a moral hazard where you don't really have to pay when you don't have to pay the full cost of bad decisions you make. You tend to make more of them, and over time those moral hazards get worse and worse and worse. And so if you've never had to pay that cost, and this is why, if you watch that wrestling movie with about the wrestling brothers and Steve Carell playing the DuPont. So good, such a good movie. Steve Carell plays the perfect DuPont kid. It illustrates this point of moral hazard. Moral hazards can be created by wealth. They can be created by physical talent. And anytime you don't have to pay the full cost of something, it creates these bad decisions. And over time, those bad decisions and the moral depravity grows geometrically, exponentially. And so it's not surprising.
I'm actually stunned that they're letting the cat out of the bag. I'm stunned that I would never have guessed the lady general counsel at Goldman Sachs. That was a dinger for me.
Yeah, none of that surprises me. Power tends to corrupt, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. So none of it's surprising at all, in the least bit to me.
So the guy just happened to, he must have been, if you want.
Well, if you listen to the history of Epstein, where he had a college degree. He didn't have a college degree. I think he was a dropout. And he ended up teaching at one of the most prestigious high schools in New York City. And the guy that hired him to do that was, what, Bush's attorney general?
No, his attorney general's father.
Yeah.
Barr's father.
Yeah, yeah. He was.
Who actually wrote a book about being a sleazebag. I used to look at the girls walking down the hall.
And then that he didn't get fired from that position. He was actually elevated into this other position where I think he was used to blackmail people. And I think some of the reasons why you get these crazy, like, court decisions that you don't expect is because people have the goods on them. They don't use it every time. They only use it on the big stuff. I think there's a lot of people who are compromised.
Who's the holder?
Shocked at how many people are compromised.
Who's the holder of the stuff? The CIA, the Mossad, who?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if it's several. I wouldn't be surprised if these intelligence agencies, from the CIA to Mossad to the ones in Europe, involved with NATO, are all kind of working together.
Well, but Barr's father started with the British Secret Service.
Yeah. So I wouldn't be surprised at all.
Wayne's writing a book on all this, you know.
Yeah.
Not so much.
It's not shocking to me in the least bit, because why? Government isn't disciplined the way firms are disciplined in a market system that's free of government intervention. When you have to face competitors and you have to provide a product or a service of value, you are disciplined. But in government sectors, that's not the case. They get their revenue from forced confiscation. They steal it from you. If you don't agree to the theft, you go to jail because you're not paying your taxes. Well, so in that kind of system, it's not at all surprising. It just isn't.
Well, I read,
so I'm not shocked by it in the least bit.
I read this stuff.
I'm shocked by the fact that they're allowing it to come out.
I don't know if they had much of a choice there, but at some point. Well, you know, I just, when you, you know, I've been watching these commercials, not that I really wanted to, about all the people that are running for office. And they're, most of them are young, some aren't, running for the House and or Senate, especially ones running for the House. And I'm sure it's that way all around the country. And they're running these primary campaigns, you know. And
oh, it's lucrative. I mean,
they're busting
these
their ass.
Go to Congress, yeah, and they end up with $20-30 million after about 8 years of quote-unquote public service.
They don't all get that way. They don't all get that way.
They're all like that, yeah.
No, they're not all like that.
Well, I mean, if I didn't have anything going on and my business failed or I wasn't able to succeed in the private sector, you know, if I didn't have a passion for what I'm doing, I'd probably run for office.
I'll make you a bet of a good drink that out of the 435 people in Congress, you can't just look at the people that are up top. I'm going to say that 300 of them have no idea what you're talking about. They're just coming from a district. They're getting there. They got two places to live.
Yeah, I can't put a number on it because I don't know the people personally. And all I know is Jeffrey Immelt, the national security advisor in the Hunt for Red October, he had the greatest line in the movies. Listen, I'm a politician, which means I'm a liar and a cheat. And when I'm not kissing babies, I'm still in their lollipops.
Yeah, well, it's...
Yeah, that is the single greatest line in the movies, in my opinion.
I think we've been locked into that.
I'm really skeptical. I'm really cynical. I've never really been on my football team. I can remember our players chanting V for Villanueva, our coach. And I'm sitting there going, why are we chanting V? I never got into the groupthink. Right. I never praised another human being like that. And I always thought it was weird that we would chant V at halftime. I've never been that way. I've always been a
winner or loser.
I've always had friends in different circles. I never was a member of a clique. I just don't understand this kind of behavior at all. I just don't.
Well, the point I'm trying to get to clumsily is that Kevin, of course, has to say that the lady from Goldman Sachs was an Obama appointee. This goes across both aisles.
Oh, it does. Yeah.
The people in Denmark.
Well, I think politics in general draws a certain type of individual.
By the way, right? that's kind of the theme of the show. Is it's not about right or left. It's about the money. And the idiots are spending all their time arguing right and left, don't realize how much they're being fleeced.
And when you work for a system that is built on theft, stealing from people who produce, when you enter that kind of system, it has to change you somehow. It does. Well, maybe it changes you a little.
You know what? A lot of people get in and they leave.
Yeah, maybe they leave because they're the few that can't stomach it.
There's a lot of people that go into the house and are there 2 and 3 terms and get out and don't run again.
Yeah, maybe they can't handle it. They can't stomach
the point. I think if you don't dive over the river, you don't get any committees. They don't want you.
Yeah.
But anyway, what I'm trying to get to is I see these people.
I think the ball players, the people that play ball, they get assigned these committee heads. Right?
Oh, without a doubt, without a doubt.
Yeah, and they. If they play ball, they get the lion's share of the reelection campaign contributions.
Well, you gotta want to get those yourself. Depends on
if you don't play ball, you don't get those kinds
of
things.
Well, play ball with who? You can play ball with the companies.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is, I'm watching these people run, and it's almost like.
No, I mean, I'm talking about the leader of the Senate or the leader of the House.
They don't give anybody any money. They get
to decide who gets a lot of this money.
No, they don't.
The National Party.
No, they don't.
They'll throw money behind somebody. They'll direct it. I think they're directing it. And if you play ball, you get it. If you don't, you don't get the money.
Well,
Harry Reid was notorious for being able to do that.
No, be careful with this. Because on the Republican side, a lot of people send money.
Well, I know. It's just as bad on the Republican side. Look at Denny Hassan.
What I'm saying is.
He was a wrestling coach, and he ends up with millions of dollars in his pocket after
think you're,
in the Senate or the House.
No, I think you're stone cold wrong, honestly, about this. Is it on the Republican side. The people send money to the Republican, maybe because their message is better. I don't know. People send money to the Republican group.
Oh, I know, yeah.
And but the people on the Democratic side. No, they don't. No, they don't. There's a big difference there. If you're on the Democratic side, you're raising your own dough. There's no way on earth that Schumer sends anybody in that place a check or the Democratic committee. They don't have it. The parties are totally different. I'm not saying which is worse, but I think who knows which is worse. But there's no way some Democratic
you're
guy...
You're saying that the Democrat leadership doesn't direct money to the to the people
They're not paying these people off. Those guys better get their own. That's why they got to go to the drug companies themselves and get bought off.
But come on, Tom. The leadership
Why did you ever get that idea?
Leadership in the House and Senate, whether they're doing it directly or not, from their own stash of cash, they talk to these companies and they're saying, "I guarantee
I'm just telling you.
This one plays ball. This one doesn't. Give this person money.
Get yourself elected from a district in South Carolina. Work your way in there and wait for the checks to come. You'll be there every morning. You're not coming unless you go." You got to go out and start getting your own guys. You got to go to.
I think it happens on both sides, Tom. No. The Republicans are just as bad as the Democrats.
I didn't.
And vice versa.
I didn't say. I just said they were different. The Republican National Committee gets contributions. The Democrats are so screwed up. They don't.
Kamala Harris had $1.6 billion.
She got those herself.
Contributions.
Or she got them from Biden's thing, but there's no.
Yeah, but Biden got them from somewhere.
I'm telling you, I think you're all wrong.
And billionaires used to give mostly.
They give the money to people individually.
Now they tend to give mostly to Democrats.
They,
If they do, they're giving it individually. That's the argument. That's the argument we're having here.
Yeah.
They're not giving it to, here's $1 billion to Schumer, pay the guys off you want. That's not happening. They're not giving it to the committee. They're giving it to individual people. That's why these drug companies own these guys individually.
Well, I'm saying is I'm sure leadership has a way to throttle funds that are being directly.
I think they can not give people committee stuff and things like that. They can make it hard for them.
If you're not on a committee, you're not going to get any money. And the only way you're going to get the money is if you're on a committee or you're the head of the committee.
I didn't say you'd have to play.
Get more money.
You make it sound like Schumer is a big checking account. No, he's not.
But Schumer gets to decide. Him and the leadership can decide who chairs.
Yeah, I worked for a campaign here in Illinois on the Democratic side years and years ago. She was raising money. They wanted her money for somebody else. They didn't have any. If Karen Reeves came back on here, she was running for House Representative. The Democratic Party didn't give her a dime.
How many years ago was that? Was that 20 years ago? So
if you want to run for Senate tomorrow in Durbin's spot and you're a Democrat, you better get your own dough. They're not giving you a dime.
Even after they secured the nomination?
No, after they secured the nomination, you still better get your own.
Well, probably the reason for that is probably because it's pretty much a blue state, and they're going to win it no matter who runs as a Democrat. It's like New York. You're not going to give a Democrat candidate money in New York.
But you will give a
Democrat Senate candidate in a toss-up state.
I understand that. Yeah. But it doesn't work the way
Republicans aren't going to give an Idaho senator money. They're going to give an Ohio senator money.
Individual people. Same thing with the Democrats. Individual people are giving that money. And the Republican side, it's more.
How much money went into that Tennessee race? That woman in Tennessee that was running as a Democrat against a Republican male, she got all kinds of money from the DNC. She got more money donated to her than I think the Republican candidate.
She got a boatload of money donated to her.
Yeah.
If it went through the DNC, it was for her.
In a blue state like Illinois, the DNC is not going to give any candidate money because they're a lock.
I'm just, believe me, will you? Nobody sends $1 billion to the DNC. They might sell it for a particular campaign, a particular person, but they're not just where the Republican group does get money. Republicans are way better at it. I'm admitting that, for God's sake.
About 10 years ago, it switched.
I don't understand your point.
More to Democrats.
I understand your point. I know money gets to people. I'm just saying it's not going the way Schumer's not writing the check. You're making it sound like he is.
Schumer is deciding who
gets
on the committee and who gets to chair the committee itself in the Senate. The same thing happens with the Republicans in the Senate. The same thing happens with Democrats and Congress people in the House.
The money that comes into these things.
And if you're chairing a committee or you're on a committee, that allows you to get that money. If you don't get those assignments, you don't get the money.
So
he is indirectly determining who gets the money. The same thing happens
with the Republicans. You're talking down the road here. This money is coming from political action committees and those kinds of things, run by people, run by groups. Yeah.
But if you're a person in the Senate and the House who doesn't play ball, you're not going to have a committee assignment. Therefore, you're not going to get the money.
Right.
You're only going to give the money to the people who are on these committees who are chairing these committees.
Who's you? You're making the jump that the people is the same people. No, they're not. If you're running for office, the money's coming out of what the Republicans use. One side uses a political action committee, and the other one uses what's the other thing they use? The 401(c)s or whatever. They have different ways of doing it. The money gets to you. It's coming from these groups. The checks are not written out of the Central Committee.
How much money do you think Idaho Republicans get? They don't get very much money.
That's my point. You're on my side now.
And Illinois, you're not getting any money. Because these are lock states. But in states, in districts,
we have,
where it's a toss-up.
We have all kinds. We have several.
Money's flowing in. Money's flowing in nationally.
Don't judge.
Money's flowing in individually.
Now, you're too good of a professor. Don't judge that at all like that. They may not flow into this year's Senate race.
I followed the Tennessee special election.
That
candidate got a lot of money, Tom, more than the Republican.
In Illinois, there's going to be a few House districts that are up for grabs. They're going to get all kinds of money on both sides.
Yeah.
Don't just say that the state of Illinois is all Democrat, they're not going to get a dime, because it's not true.
No, I'm talking about in the toss-up. districts.
I understand, and there's toss-up districts in every state, blue states,
people
red states.
People receive money, but in the lock, in the Republican lock, or the Democrat lock, districts or states, they're not getting that much money.
I get that. I don't know why we're disagreeing. So markets backed up. Come back here about 25%. Is this a buy the dip again or what? One of my Jimmy. Who
well,
does,
I'm looking at. I follow several things, and most of the things I follow are things that people have to put their own money in. And if you look at yields, recently yields, all yields, I have this dynamic yield curve that I created on Federal Reserve Economic Database for Ed. And every once in a while I look at it. And man, yields are really heading down. So you hear these reports of China selling off treasuries or maybe European countries selling off treasuries. But somebody has to be buying. Because if demand is rising...
Well, I don't know why you're hearing the Europeans are selling it off because they're the ones that have made up for the giant Chinese.
Stuff, right? You hear stuff on Twitter. I'm not sure if it's true or not. But
The Brits have picked up the entire $100 billion at the China draft
cool,
list.
Yeah. Yeah. So maybe that's where it's coming from. But when yields fall, that means demand for treasuries is higher than the supply. The increases in demand outstrip the increases in supply of these treasuries, which pushes prices up and yields down. And I'm hoping that continues in the summer. So when the summer comes around, I can refinance my VA loan that I'm currently living in North Carolina and get a lower interest rate. That's what I'm hoping for. That's what I'm watching right now. And those yields are coming down. All the yields are coming down.
They are. The question is, if the inflation sneaks up some more, are they going to keep coming down?
Inflation's still there. So I'm not sure why this demand is out there. I'm not sure what's going on with the demand. All I know is demand for these treasuries, which I can't explain. I don't understand why it is the case. But demand seems to be higher currently than the increases in the supply. And so prices are being bid up and yields are coming down. And I just pray that continues through June.
Why do you suppose with the rate at where we're running this deficit?
I don't understand why that's going on, honestly. I can't explain it.
I don't know who everybody's doing that, but boy.
Yeah. Given the amount of inflation that the Fed is... and banking is creating, I don't understand.
Not to mention the fact that we're insulting the hell out of these countries, they're still buying.
I know. I mean, I don't understand how demand increases in demand are greater than the increases in supply for these treasuries. I don't understand that at all. I'm trying to figure that out.
Yeah, I mean,
if you have an answer, let me know because I can't figure it out.
I don't understand how some of these countries that are seemingly being insulted.
Yeah.
Are still showing up, but maybe
yeah,
they got nowhere
else
to go.
Didn't hold any punches when he was over there in Germany, huh?
Yeah, well,
he's like, hey, if you want us to be on your team, essentially what he said is, if you want us to be on our team, drop all this collectivism and embrace your history and embrace your individual nationality. Otherwise, bye bye. I mean, that's essentially what I got.
And now, is that my message? Why would anybody care? Why would we actually even give
well,
that lecture?
I think what it is we're trying to align our mission with Europe's mission. I think the two missions are misaligned.
What do you think?
Europe is still into that globalism, still into that, like, we're not gonna produce any energy. Although there are cracks. It looks like Italy is pulling away from this, you know, this globalist, we're not gonna have the energy, we're gonna be dependent on we're gonna let our manufacturing go to other countries. Italy seems to be breaking away from that because their tax rules, I just read an article, their tax rules are creating a Laffer curve within Europe where very wealthy people are relocating to Italy where they have this special preferential tax treatment, which is encouraging relocation to Italy. So Italy seems to be breaking from
that's
Europe.
That's kind of a zero-sum game.
Yeah. Well, not for Italians, not for the Italian government.
Okay, well that's.
I mean, you're stealing sand from the German side of the beach, but you're putting that sand in Italy. So for Germany, it's bad. For Italy, it's not. But for Europe, it's probably a wash.
Right? Can we go? Maybe we should go back to where things are growing enough to where everybody can grow. To where now everybody who is growing has to be taking it from somebody else. It's kind of a bad world.
It is, but that's been going on in the United States forever. Like
no,
the startup New York paper, that I did with my wife a few years ago. We were looking at the startup New York campuses in the state of New York, and what the system does is it provides a tax-free haven if you start up or relocate your business to one of these startup campuses, which is on a SUNY or CUNY campus, what does that do? Well, instead of starting up in a rural county in New York, you don't start up there. You start up in an urban center.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's a way of... That's why we got to...
Or you steal it from New Jersey or you steal it from Connecticut.
I think if you went back in the...
It doesn't increase GDP. It just shifts where that GDP is produced.
Which, I'm saying, if there was actual growth, like all the buffoons on TV continue to try and tell you.
Yeah.
If there was actual growth and everybody was growing 2 or 3 or 4%, you wouldn't see any of that. Now, every time you see somebody making a gazillion dollars, you sit there, your first reaction is, okay, who did he steal that from, right? Yeah. And that's not healthy, you know? You know that.
Well, I think in a society where, I mean, you generally have two kinds of people. Two people who welcome competition and two people who are afraid of competition. And those who are afraid of competition want government to protect them from the competition. And that happens everywhere. It happens in labor. It happens in industry. It happens in retail. 80, it happens everywhere.
80% of the people in the middle, they want everybody else to be competitive except you.
Yeah. Well, businesses. I used to be pro-business because I grew up in Idaho. And I realized pro-business is not pro-free markets.
No.
Because pro-business policies do what? They want free markets and things that they purchase for production, but they want protection in the markets they sell. They want to be the only seller in the market. They want the government to increase restrictions so that they end up being...
In the immortal words of George Stigler, competition is the best thing in the world for every industry except yours.
Exactly. Well, no, it's great in everything you purchase, too. All the raw material. Free markets are great in your factor markets. That's awesome.
In your industry,
but not in the market that you sell in.
In your industry, it's cutthroat competition. These guys are sleazebags.
Yeah.
Anyway, buddy, what do you got going this week? By the way,
I just finished the paper with a colleague of mine, Cephas. Him and I just finished the paper on the opportunity zones, and we're getting it ready for submission. Cool. It's like a 10,000-word article. I can share it with you guys if you want.
Oh, yeah.
It's pretty interesting.
Hey,
it's a follow-up on my Startup New York stuff.
I was thinking of you yesterday as I was wandering through Audrey's garage, and I noticed the snow shovel I had bought for her, and it was $29.97. And I'm thinking, Hal is sniveling about one that costs $20. He got a deal.
Well, the probability, you got to look at the probabilities of that kind of snowstorm. They're very small in North Carolina. So when you do the expected value calculation, it's not worth it to buy the shovel. Plus, Tom, all the shovels were sold out.
Well, then you didn't have a choice.
Because they didn't have enough supply for the demand because of that snowstorm.
Well, see, we should have brought some down there. We could have just taken
them. I was going to buy a shovel, but when I went on Amazon or Walmart, it said it'll be delivered in 3 weeks.
Well, that's not helping you out much. All right, buddy. Talk at you next week. SP Futures down 21. NASDAQ is down 175. Actually come back quite a bit. We'll see if we keep coming back or whether we head south again. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
That's all, folks.